pastors here at the church. Pastor Ken is away this week on holiday, so I hope he's having a wonderful time. did a survey, self-administered survey of my life this week to see how I was spending my time. Try to separate my day, or my week actually, into the things that I have to do and the time that's taken up by that, and then whatever's left over afterwards. So what are the things that you have to do, same as me? I mean, sleep and go to work and eat and travel and clean my house and, you know, spend time with my daughter, making sure she's ready for the day and cleaning and all that stuff. And when I added up all of that during the week, and then I subtracted that from the total amount of time that is in a week, I discovered that out of my whole week, about 19% is what you would call flexible time. When you take away everything that I have to do, what was left was 19% of my time, which was about 1 out of 5 hours, I guess, if you work it out that way. That is time that's left to either read a book or see friends or watch a movie or go on outing with my family or help someone move house or volunteer my time somewhere or other. That was what's left over. And I did that because I was thinking about a lot of the sermons that I hear are under the category of what you would call exhortation. They are exhorting you to do something, go and do something with it. A lot of the exhortation sermons that I hear about focus on that flexible time. And we all have that. Yours may not be 19%, but it'll be something, less or more than mine. It'll be something that's your flexible time, the time that you aren't doing something you must do. And a lot of exhortation sermons focus on that time, saying, you know what, instead of doing the things that you're doing right now, why don't you instead try and do something like, why don't you try to read your Bible more? Or how about you serve more at the church? Or how about you come to this particular social event and you know, build a fellowship with you know, fellow believers? Or something along those lines. Stop doing what you want to do and start doing what we want you to do. You know, that's really what I see a lot of in exegetical sermons. But if we're going to really be disciples of Jesus Christ, which is definitely what we're called to do, we cannot ignore the other 81% of time. We must focus on that too and give attention to how it is that we are to be disciples of Jesus Christ in the things that we have to do too. And I do hear sermons about that from time to time, and particularly you hear sermons about what it means to be a good father or a good husband or a good friend and neighbor. But one of the topics that I don't hear much about, and definitely fits into the category of one of those things that we must do, is what does it mean to be a good worker? What does it mean to work like a Christian? And it's not something that we cover very much in the church, but it's something that's extremely important. We don't have a very well-grounded, fleshed-out theology when it comes to your attitude towards your job and your vision for what it means to be a Christian in the workplace and how that looks. So the question that we're going to seek to answer tonight is, what does God say about working, the importance of working, and the value that it has in the world today? And what we see very quickly in the Bible is that work was created as part of a good world. It is in Genesis chapter 1 that we find that as humans we are given work to do. And that's before the fall comes. So it's a good world. It's created as exactly the way God wants it to be. And there is work. So work's good, right? It's one of those words that we seem to have a bad relationship with. When we say the word work, even the word conjures up negative kind of feelings and cringy kind of reactions. It's like the word flossing or taxes or something like that. We don't really like the word work, but it is created to be a good thing. We are given what is called the cultural mandate in Genesis chapter 1, and that is we are called to go out and to change the world, to make something new out of what we've been given, something that wasn't there before. We had to work the ground to subdue the world around us. And in that way, we build things. We build culture and society and develop technologies and do these types of things, all the while doing it as a reflection of God's image. So as we work, what we create with our work is supposed to reflect the nature of God. And that's why we're made in the image of God, so we can accomplish that task. But that is the cultural mandate that we're given. It's to work, and it's given in a good world. Now, the attitude that the church has doesn't often reflect this. When we think of work, and I'm talking about all kinds of work now, we don't often really grasp the idea that this is a good thing. Instead, we often make a, maybe even subconscious, but certainly illegitimate, separation between spiritual activities and secular activities. And saying, well, the work of the church, that's really doing the work of God in the world. As you come and evangelize and build the church and build the kingdom that God is creating here, that's the world, that's the work that God is most interested in, really important, that's really the work of God. And everything else as well, just trying to make a living. If you're a teacher or you're a butcher or whatever you are, a carpenter, that's just making a living. And so we make the separation between spiritual and secular activities. And this isn't something new. This is something which we can trace back to the 3rd century. The church father Eusebius began to make this distinction. Eusebius made the distinction between what he called the perfect life. And the perfect life was the life of the priest, the one who was able to dedicate all his time to doing the things of God, to prayer and evangelism and administering the elements and everything else like that. And then if you didn't have a perfect life, and by the way, the perfect life was the only one that came with a calling, only those who had became priests and had that perfect life and had a vocation, in other words. The word vocation really means to be called. And everyone else who didn't fit into that category was called a permitted life. It's not bad. It's just not great. It's permitted. It's allowed. It's the way it is, but ultimately, it's not important. It doesn't add to anything. It's just making a living. It's just getting by in the world, and it's not going to amount to anything at the end of the day. And that type of thinking carried on throughout the church for many, many, many centuries. And today, we still feel that way, I think. The bulk of jobs that are existing in the world today would be part of that permitted life type of idea, and that's the jobs that the bulk of the people in the world have. And what we'll do often is try to say, well, this is the way that I can redeem my job. You know, it's not something, my job's not that important in the grand scheme of things, but this is the way that I redeem it. I use the time I have with my coworkers to evangelize. So my workplace becomes my mission field. And so I can reach out to those around me, those people who otherwise, if I didn't have this particular job, I wouldn't have access to them. But as it is, I have 8 hours a day, 5 days a week with them, get to build some nice relationships, get to tell them about Jesus. Great, wonderful thing to do. The second thing that we do in order to redeem the permitted job that we have is to say, well, I have this job, but I'm able to use some of the money I make from this job to give over to the church where the real work is being done. And so I take the money and I give it over to the church or to a Christian different organization or parachurch thing. And that work that they're doing with the money I give, it enables them to go and do some real great stuff. And don't get me wrong, those are two wonderful, noble sentiments that I do not want to do anything to detract from today. But our thinking doesn't go any deeper than that. And that's where I want to challenge us today. We need to think deeper and recapture a fuller image of what our relationship is supposed to be with the job that we have. Now, the Reformation came along and 500 years ago, almost to the day, plus a few days, I suppose. But the Reformation came along and Martin Luther radically changed the idea that we had towards work. He brought about new, fresh perspective, biblical perspective, of the importance of a job. And Martin Luther said this: "The work of monks and priests, however holy and arduous they may be, do not differ on wit in the sight of God from the works of the rustic laborer in the field or the woman going about her household tasks. All works are measured before God by faith alone. And you hear what he's saying there? All works are measured by a single scale in God's eyes, and that scale is faith. Are you doing your job in faith? This means that all work is important to God. And further than that, all work can bring him glory if done in faith. We see a first Bible reading for tonight is 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. Now, it's a quick one. You don't have to turn there. But 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 31 says this: so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Do all to the glory of God. Whatever you do, do it to the glory of God. And so this begs the question, how? If all work is measured by faith, and so by working with faith, this is something that God pleases God and makes our work legitimate and important, and if we can bring God glory by what we do, how is that possible? How do we glorify God with our job? Well, the answer is found in Colossians chapter 3, verses 22 to 24. Bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as from the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. And what's being said here is that as Christians, the way in which we glorify God with our job is that we work hard. We do a good job. We do it because it is Christ that we are working for. We are working with mind towards his reward more than it is towards any earthly reward that we might receive. We do it with integrity, with honesty, and with diligent labor. And that type of attitude shows faith. And that faith is what we are measured by. This is the way that our work matters to God. The way in which we work matters to him. Driven by faith, we can glorify God with our job by working in this way. But we can go even further than this, because not only does the way in which you do your job matter to God, but we can go further to say your job matters to him too. Not only the fact that you should do it well and with integrity is something of utmost importance to God, which it is, but also the job that you have, whatever it is, and I hope you know that by me saying this, I'm not referring to jobs that are obviously sinful, like dealing drugs or something, but jobs that have a general understanding of being morally upright. These jobs matter to God too. And to understand that, it's important that we put our job into the right story. We have to put our job into a story, because without doing that, our work will never be at all meaningful to us. And it'll never make sense to us either. And so what I mean by putting it into a story is, I'll use an analogy, and this is a Timothy Keller's analogy actually, but I'm going to steal it. So you're standing at a bus stop, and then someone comes up to you that you've never met before in your life, and without saying anything else, comes up to you and says, "The tongue of a giraffe is colored sky blue," and then walks away. Now, that makes no sense to you at all. Now, not that you don't understand the words. Obviously, you understand all the words, but still, it doesn't make at all any sense to you whatsoever. And so in order to try and react to this and try to figure out what's going on, what you're going to do is you're going to create a story. In your mind, you're going to create a story about what just happened and fit this situation into that story. And so the story that you may create is, well, this gentleman is crazy. He's a crazy person. And they're doing a crazy thing. And so you're going to react according to that story. Or you might think, this gentleman has met someone previously in their life who looks of approximate, you know, size and height to me, and you know, we have similar bearings, and so they've obviously mistaken me for someone with whom they've had a conversation about the hue of a giraffe's tongue. And they're coming back now to tell the person the answer to the question, and they've just mistaken me for someone else. Or the story might be that this person is in fact a spy who is trying to give you some type of covert secret information, trying to overthrow the government, and now you've been implicated in some grand plot. And how you react will depend on what story you choose to fit this into. You're either going to slowly back away and say nothing in order to not provoke someone who might be crazy, or you're going to tell them, I think you're mistaking me for someone else, but interesting fact. Or you're going to tackle them to the ground and call for someone to dial 911 and apprehend them until the authorities arrive. You're going to do something. You're going to react in some way, and the way you react is going to be according to what you believe the story is that surrounds the action that just happened. We need to fit our job into the story that God is telling in this world. And God is telling a story in this world. And part of the story that God is unfolding before us is that everybody has a calling. Not just those who are priests and pastors. And everybody in this world has a calling. Doesn't matter what you do. Now, I like what the Puritans say about this. They say that everyone actually has three callings. Everyone in the world has the highest calling, and their highest calling, if everyone in the world, is the call of Christ. The call to commune with God, to have a relationship with God through faith in Christ and the grace given unto us, that we might know Him as Lord and Savior, and build on that relationship through prayer and spiritual disciplines as we go through. That is the highest calling that everyone shares in the world, and that is a calling upon your life, a vocation on your life. The second type of calling that everyone shares is a common calling. And this means that everyone is equally called to do what the Bible is asking them to do, to love your neighbor, to be kind to the poor, to obey the moral law that God has given unto us. These things are the common calling that, again, we have a vocation to do these things as we live out, and everyone has the same one. And then everyone has a specific calling. But this is something that is not shared with everyone. Everyone has a specific calling. It's to do with the specific goals that you have in your life. Goals to do with the relationships you will have. Goals to do with the job that you will have, and the specific goals that you will reach with these things. For instance, I think that I have the specific calling to be married to Debbie Kim. Now, if there was another gentleman who also had the similar calling, we would have a problem. Thankfully, I'm the only one. There are going to be specific callings on every single person's life. And these specific callings will call them to jobs like being a farmer, or a cleaner, or a software developer, or these types of jobs. And the reason that these jobs can be considered a calling is because it is through these types of jobs that God is loving His people. Luther goes on to point out in his reworking of our understanding of vocation and calling, that God, in order to fulfill the prayer of give us this day our daily bread, in order to do that in the life of His loved one, He will use the economic system. So in order to give us this day our daily bread, God is enabling the farmer to grow the wheat, enabling the truck driver to drive the wheat over to the mill, the miller to grind it, the baker to take the flour and bake it, the shopkeeper to sell it, and then it comes to my table and I eat with the means that God has given me to purchase the bread. that God uses the economic system to do this. And this doesn't simply apply to the food that we put on our table, but also applies to the clothes that we put on our back, to the shelters that we have to keep us from the weather. In all these different spheres of life, God is using the economic systems around us, the vocational systems around us, to feed us and to clothe us and to protect us, to give us what we need. And the Bible is clear that God cares for the needs of his people. The reason that we can consider all these types of jobs to be callings is because God cares that bridges don't fall down. God cares that buildings remain clean so that the job, so that work can be done and the infection doesn't spread. God cares that there is good policing of society to keep us safe, good and fair management of businesses, good and engaging storytelling to captivate our hearts and help us to share a common experience and bind us together as society. God cares that these things happen, and these things happen well. Your job is an avenue through which God is providing for his people. And that means that your job is an expression of Christian love. Because by doing your job, you are producing fruit that can be shared with the rest of the people. That means that if you try to answer the question, how can I love my neighbor? Do your job. That's a way that you can love your neighbor. Because by doing your job, you're providing things that they can share in as well. So when you try to apply it to your specific situation, you might struggle by thinking, well, how is it that you can be a Christian dishwasher? What does it mean to wash dishes as a Christian? Well, wash them really well. That's the main thing that it means, to wash them really well, to make them clean and to do it quickly. That is to do your job well. To do it with integrity and wisdom and hard work, that is important to God. Because by doing so, you're providing a service that matters to him. Because through that service, he is providing for his people. We need to understand that our job is fitting into this story of God's provision. That it's fitting into the story that God is telling, that we all have a calling upon our life. Goals set before us in order to be achieved. But bringing faith into work has another effect as well. Not only does it bring our life, our job meaning, which is what I've been trying to build up to this point. And I just want to quickly say that if you're currently not in the workforce, or you're in the workforce but dissatisfied with your job, if you're looking for a job that has meaning, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a meaningful job. The doctor will struggle with equally as meaningless type of feelings within him as he does the job as the street sweeper or as the dishwasher. Both of them can be felt as equally as meaningless. Meaning is brought into the job that we do. We bring meaning with us. And we bring meaning with us when we connect our job to the story that God is telling. And by bringing that in, we have a job that is meaningful as a result. So it brings that bolstered sense of duty and dignity to all jobs that happen. But also it prevents the other extreme, which is that the gospel gives us the strength and the inner buoyancy that whatever your job is, it's not going to destroy you, as so often can happen. So often we tend to pour our identity and our worth and all of our sense of meaning into the job that we have. Martin Lloyd-Jones, who was a preacher, but before that was a doctor, said that every doctor he ever met could, when they died, the tombstone could read, "Born a man, died a doctor." In other words, every doctor he ever met had the sense of I am a doctor before I am anything else. That is my identity. This is what I do, and this is what gives me meaning and purpose in this world. And by doing that, we begin to worship work instead of worshiping through our work. But also we begin to build ourselves up with pride and a sense of identity that is not connected to Christ at all. And so if you're doing your job and it's going well, that means I'm a good person because I'm contributing to society. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. This is my identity. It's going well, and so I'm a good person. It doesn't matter if I'm a good husband or a good citizen or a good father. I do my job well, so I'm a good person. And the other thing that can happen is if your job goes badly, you lose your job, or it all falls apart in one way or another, which so often happens, you break inside. You shatter because there's nothing left. We, as Christians, hold on to the fact that not only do we have a specific calling, and that is a vocation, but we have a common calling and a highest calling too. That our highest calling draws us up to have a relationship with Christ. This giving us our identity. This is where we get our worth from. This is where we get our sense of love and dignity from as well. And we build our relationship upon that. We also have a common calling which we cannot neglect. Knowing that we have a duty towards God to obey the moral laws, to live righteously in this world, to love our neighbors. To do these things is a calling, a vocation in our life which demands our attention and our strength too. We don't become so myopic in our view that we just focus on the one job that we have that's the be-all and end-all of my existence. And we need to become keenly aware of this as students and also as workers. Students are equally in danger of making it such that their studies becomes all that they are focused on. So that when a stressful period of time comes in, when exams are looming or when a lot of assignments are due, just like at work when there's great deadlines that we have to get to, suddenly church is out the window, you know, reading Bible, any kind of daily devotion is out the window, prayer life is out the window, except please God help me with this exam. Everything is gone except for this. If you do that, you're letting your slip show. You're letting God see where your priorities really lie, where your identity really lies. I know that seasons of life, some of them are stressful and the pressure builds and what you have available to you will change. But you have to guard your identity. You have to guard that highest calling that you have in your life, that common calling you have too. You have to guard these things to make sure that they don't become sidelined in your daily walk. The other way that we bring faith into our work and work as Christians is that it provides for us a moral compass that guides us through the treacherous workplace sometimes. If you are currently in the workplace or you are soon going to be entering the workplace, you will find that in every industry there is pressure to cut corners, to do something of a subpar, to bend the truth a little bit here and there to in order to win over customers or to keep, you know, the inspector happy or whatever it is, to choose loyalty over ethics. There are huge pressures to do this in every industry. And if you don't have that inner core of righteousness that comes from knowing who you are, knowing what God desires from you, then you will adopt the righteousness of that industry. You will begin to live according to the ethical boundaries that they set for you and the righteousness that they demand of you and the loyalty that they demand of you. Instead of showing loyalty to Christ, the righteousness of the cross, the life of the Spirit, these types of things. To stand, to risk punishment or risk losing your job for the sake of what is right, to do what is costly sometimes, it will be required of you as you go through working in this world. And you're only going to do it if you bring that real sense of identity that comes from knowing Christ into your work too. We must consider how our faith will distinctively shape our work as we go through life. The last way that we are changed as workers by being Christians is that we have hope. Hope that can bring us through times of deep frustration. There are times when you will work and work and work at something and see no progress, see no fruit coming out of it. You hold on, knowing that by working hard and with integrity, you are glorifying God. And in glorifying God, you are reaping for yourself a reward in heaven. Knowing that no matter what is happening with your job, it has dignity and it has worth when done in faith. You work, not because you see so much about what the benefit of it in the world around you, but you know that by working faithfully, you are glorifying God. And so you hold hope in that. But you also hope, knowing that the cultural mandate that we've been given from the very beginning does not end when Christ returns. When we consider what will last for all eternity, remember that it is this world that we will live in, this planet that we will live on. That when Christ comes back, yes, there will be a cleansing and a renewing and a redeeming of all things. But there will still be elements that stay the same. What we build and create can endure into the new creation. Sky Jathani says, "We do not worship a God who replaces. We worship a God who redeems." Glorious truth when you consider salvation, but also consider it in terms of the cultural mandate that we have been given. There is a place for human culture, for human society, for music and art and different ways of expressing and even technological changes that we have made. There is a place for this in the new city that is described in Revelation chapter 21, verses 24 to 26. We see the new city being spoken of. And yet there seems to be a place for what we as humans have created. Verse 24, talking of the light of the glory of God, says this, "By its light will the nations walk, and the kings of earth will bring their glory to it." Now speaking of the city, says, "And its gates will never be shut by day, and there will be no night. They will bring into it the glory and honor of the nations." The new city that God is creating and will come about when Christ returns, it has a vibrant spectrum of color and diversity all over it. As all nations come together, bringing with it their language and their art and their culture, bringing all of it together to worship God, redeemed, no longer sinful, no longer broken, but redeemed and made new. We work because perhaps it will not be the end of the story for what we create. We work with the hope that God is glorified by how we work, and God is feeding his people and caring for his people by what we do, and knowing that it will not all fade away, but in one way or another, it will echo for eternity. My call to you tonight is to allow your vision and your attitude towards your job to be shaped by the story that God is telling. The story of the goodness of work created from the beginning for us to do. The story of the glory given to God when we work hard and honestly. The story that we are all called to the different jobs and that each job has dignity. That through the jobs we have, God is loving his people so we are able to love our neighbors. And the story of the redemption of culture, which will happen when Christ returns. And so with that in mind, with that story in place, let us go forward from this place, worshiping God through our daily 9 to 5 and loving our neighbors through our work. Let's pray together.